This time on Weather Brains, looking back at Storm Alert Extreme.
The important point is to try to get all this information across, and there's a lot of it.
Jason Simpson says something to make Brian Peters feel old.
Brian actually trained me as a storm spotter before I could drive.
Plus, what folks were saying about one meteorologist.
You should have seen all the pretty women following Jason around down at the Storm Alert Extreme Saturday.
Also this time, making severe weather information available on broadcast radio in central Alabama.
Having our audio on the radio is just a great service.
Plus, get ready for a weather lesson from Jason. And we'll talk about Alabama's weather for this week.
A very dynamic storm is going to blow through here. The question involves the quality of the air mass.
It's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the weather netcast that's all about the weather, produced by the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black. With me, a full and motley crew this time, starting out with ABC 3340 lead meteorologist James Spann. How's it going, James?
Whoa, David, we got a cast of characters in this show here tonight, don't we?
Really, it is a motley crew, and I don't know what's going to happen, but hello to one of the motleys, Jason Simpson, a rare person to attend with us, but we're glad to have you on board.
I'm happy to be here.
You staying out of trouble?
Trying to, after a couple of Mississippi State wins, I'm doing my best.
If you're not following the potential for severe weather, we know that you're securely following what's happening on the basketball court.
That's right.
Or the gridiron, too, or maybe.
Or, you know, both of them. Okay. Both of them, you know.
Yep. You should have seen all the pretty women following Jason around down at the Storm Alert Extreme Saturday.
And that is J.B. Elliott, who we are also glad to have. J.B., you probably better give us some more info on that. Let me say also hello right quick to Brian Peters. So it really is rounding out the motley crew. Now to the hot topic. J.B., go ahead. Give us the scoop on the women and Jason.
And tell me how far behind me they were, because I didn't see them.
You didn't look around. Wherever Jason goes, there's a whole group of pretty women following.
Well, Jason, I understand, is the eligible young bachelor type still available, so I'm not surprised. Jason, you just got to kind of look over your shoulder from time to time.
Maybe I should. If you'd like to meet me, I'll be at the Mississippi State Arkansas game this weekend.
All right. Speaking of Storm Alert Extreme, James, big weekend in Central Alabama for folks who are anxious to learn about severe weather. Tell us your thoughts on Storm Alert Extreme for 06.
I really thought it was great, David. We this year did the show down at the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center, which, for those of you that are listening from out of state, that's the big convention complex in downtown Birmingham. We had a packed house. We almost ran out of room in there. In fact, I put some pictures up on the blog, and one of the top picture I put on there, see if you can find J.B. Elliott in the crowd. And I noticed that somebody immediately captured him and figured out who it is here. He was working his hair. I mean, I don't know what's the deal with that picture, but J.B. was doing something to his hair in that shot.
I didn't know if there was a table off in the corner where there were some donuts or not.
Well, you know, we're going to get some donuts down there next year. That was my fault. We didn't get any. He's probably going through donut withdrawal. That's what he's doing in the picture there.
I have to take care of my hair. I only have a little bit.
We had a great time, David. Brian Peters was on his A game doing the training, and I just thought it was a great day.
Wait a minute. Brian showed up, and he was prepared, and everything went smoothly? Is that what you're trying to say?
And he stayed awake
relatives
the whole time.
God, wow.
Yeah, Brian did a great job. Sure did.
And we probably I've not counted them. The email traffic has been extreme since the show, but I know we picked up at least 25 new Skywatchers from people that were trained that day. They got both the basic and the advanced Skywarn class, and I kind of pumped up the Skywatcher program, and so we picked up about two dozen new members, and that's awesome. So big
I've been involved in weather for 320 years, and I learn something new every year.
That's really great. Now, this has been a especially important time, James, is it not? Because this is really the chance of the year. This is not so much a performance type of program, but it's a real learning workshop type of atmosphere, right?
It isn't. We don't try and disguise this as anything else. This is a seminar. It is a teaching session. We don't sign autograph cards. We don't have, entertainment like we do in the spring. That's more of a show. The Storm Alert in February, we take that to small towns all across the state. This is intense teaching, and it's not just a one-hour deal. It's basically a six-hour deal. And the place was packed, and everybody came back after lunch. And that shows you the level of interest in weather in this state. And I think that speaks volumes. And already we're, you know, getting ready for Storm Alert Extreme 2007. The Birmingham Automobile Dealers Association, they want us back. And we'll be back at the BJCC at the car show. That they have the International Auto Show going on the same weekend, and we'll do it again next November. So hopefully next year will be bigger and better.
Well, Brian Peters, you have done your share of severe weather classes in your day during the past, few years, both with ABC 3340 and National Weather Service. So what's your thinking on how the whole deal went?
Oh, I thought it was great. One of my first years during Storm Spotter training, I had 166 people at a Storm Spotter class in Lawrence. Lawrence County. No, not Lawrence County.
See, he's getting old now, James.
Malton.
He's forgetting
Malton.
All the communities.
That is
run
Lawrence
together.
County. Yeah,
you're right. It's Lawrence.
That is Lawrence County. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think Brian's sleeping to our program here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not exactly. I'm still recovering from getting up early Saturday morning though, and. This beat that, because I counted somewhere close to 200 during the morning, and I think, as James said, most of them came back. So that's a sign of their dedication or gluttony for punishment. I'm not sure which, but I thought it was good. And the questions are always different in every class, and this one was the same way, and there were a lot of good questions too. So with a group that large, it's always hard to handle those questions, but it was nice to hear the people with the questions, because that shows they have some interest. So
JB says he learned something too, and JB has been doing this a year or two, so it sounds like there was some pretty good information that went across the lines there.
And I know, we stress this, David, one of the things we try and encourage people to do is you need to be trained once a year. Even if you've been through basic and advanced, you need to come back every year. So hopefully it'll be a tradition, and really that's going to kind of turn into our annual Skywatcher meeting. And hopefully by next November we'll have over 300 by then. That's the goal. But ultimately, I'd like to have 500.
You guys have put a lot of emphasis to in building up your electronic presence with viewers across the state. Instant messaging chat on the internet, and it sounds like this got a pretty good boost out of that as well. So maybe when severe weather threats are occurring, you may get some more real-time information?
Yep, absolutely. And in addition to being our eyes during severe weather, they also have cameras and camcorders, and hopefully we'll get some pretty cool videos and still pictures to show storms. We can put these sky cams out, you know, all day and all night. We'll never be able to cover the whole state with them. So if we get an army of 500 people with cameras, and we'll get it on tape that way.
For people who were not able to attend this time, James, and who are hearing about this, but what's the next best thing for them to do at this point? To, for example, what would you advise them to do about becoming a member of the messaging network?
Well, for people listening to this show that want to be a part of it, just send me an email, tell me about yourself, and really I think you can teach yourself a pretty good bit about weather by just like reading the blog and watching some of the videos we do and just poke around the various weather service sites. And, you know, then I should mention, too, the weather service, you know, obviously trains. They have Skywarn training, and I don't know exactly when they do that, but I'm sure they'll start to do that before the spring season. So maybe you can catch one of the Weather Service sessions before ours next November.
Jason Simpson, I'm going to put you on the hot seat.
Go ahead.
What kind of assessment, what sort of job do you think Mr. Peters did Saturday?
Well, I was only able to be there for half of it. Like, okay. I had to go work the Who Wants to Be a Meteorologist booth, which was a job of its own.
Ooh, okay.
You know, we had a lot of fun down there, but...
But Brian wasn't goofing off. I just want to make sure he was doing his job.
No, Brian always does a great job. Brian actually trained me as a storm spotter before I could drive.
Hmm. Hey, Brian, you want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole?
That sure makes me feel old.
Ooh.
No problem there, Brian. You don't look a day older than you did back in the 90s.
This is
Oh, thank you.
Real. Yeah, I think it was either 95 or early 96. Brian did a storm spotter training at Wallace State Community College up in Cullman County, and some of my friends who had driver's licenses at the time could drive me down to it. And it was just as informative this time as it was back then. You know, and just like James said, you do need to go through it once a year. You really do. I took that that new certification test from the American Meteorological Society a few months ago, and it's amazing how much you forget that you think you know, that you don't use on a daily basis. Well, we don't use wall cloud, funnel cloud, rotation, mesocyclone. We don't use words like that on a daily basis. And if you're not really in tune with the weather all the time or haven't been in tune with it for years, it's good to have a refresher course. So I totally agree on having good storm spotter training. And I've never been to a single session that has been done better than Brian Peters. I've been to some in other county warning areas, other universities, and Brian Peters is tops.
Let's don't blow his head up too big. Over.
Yeah, we've probably gone far enough into that. We have established that he did his job well. So congratulations, Mr. Peters. I got to hand that to you. All these guys are, you know, really giving you good marks.
Thank you. Just send money.
Ah, yes. Well, let me get your thoughts, too, on another angle, James, and that was tying all of this in with the car show. It sounds like that was a big hit, too.
Well, at first, you wonder how this is going to work, doing a partnership with the Birmingham Automobile Dealers. They've got a huge car show that goes on down there at the Civic Center every November, and I realized there's some pretty good synergy, and it really worked out well. And what was cool, the Automobile Dealers Association allowed everybody that was trained by Brian at Storm Alert Extreme to go to the car show free. And there's a pretty good little admission charge to that, so I thought that was a nice perk for showing up. And the feedback I got was all positive. I've yet to receive a negative comment about the whole thing. And in fact, a lot of people said they really enjoyed the car show after it was over. So it was just it was a great day. And we'll do it again, same place, same circumstances, and hopefully better off. The only thing we didn't do, David, was have the table full of donuts for JB.
I was going to ask about that. What happened?
I don't know. I just forgot. But we've already got to deal with the coffee with the Red Diamond people. They had a display up there by the television station's booth, and they've agreed to come down and do the coffee for next year. And if nothing else, I'll go by the Krispy Kreme and get a bunch of jelly donuts for JB.
I had a couple in my pocket.
That could be our...
did you bring them home, JB?
Stream.
No, I ate them piecemeal at a time. I had them one in each pocket.
You could warm up the crowd by doing a donut eating contest, you know? Watching JB work about 30 of those things before the show starts.
Well, who's he going to go against?
Nobody. He just sat there by himself and ate donuts.
Could be the king of the operation, but he might get some folks to join in, too. Let me ask you guys a serious question, James. This is also an opportunity, is it not, for you to get some feedback and some input from folks who do watch what you guys do on television and on the internet. And I'm curious, did you get any comments or questions, anything that kind of pointed you towards certain feelings about what people are thinking and feeling about your coverage?
Well, I met a lot of people that listen to this show. And
oh, my goodness,
frankly,
that's scary.
That's very scary. But most of the real compliments dealt with either the severe weather coverage on television or the internet products, this vastly expanded line, Weather Brains, this 30-minute show we're doing every week, and the blog and the videos and all that. So there's no doubt that there is a huge paradigm shift in the media, and we're seeing it before our very eyes. Television will be around, but we just won't think of ourselves a television station. Will be a content provider. So I think people are really latching on to the internet family of products that we have, like this show, and I'm just thankful that they are, which means we can reach our audience anytime we want to. You don't have to wait until 5, 6, or 10 o'clock or the morning news to do that. So,
well, when you talk with these people, then, is this sort of giving you assurances or helping confirm in your mind that the direction you guys are taking with your online information is the right way?
Yes, and I like to ask people, what is it that we're not doing that you would like to see us do, and things like that. And the only way you'll ever get better is to listen to good criticism, constructive criticism, and listen to suggestions from people. And I think we're moving in the right direction.
What do people,
no doubt about that.
What do people wish you'd do more of, or what do they wish you'd do less of?
You know, it was funny that the one main gripe I had, people want me to give them one of these stinking thermometers we're giving away.
Okay.
I mean, I say, look, you can go down to the Walmart and buy one for $2. It just doesn't have the logo on it. So,
hey, these sound like they're as hot as...
But it has your voice on it.
The bobble-headed dolls.
You know, somebody sent in a picture of a bird that liked it. This bird, this cockatiel, incessantly hits the button to make it come on. So that's probably my biggest demographic, or the bird demographic, with that.
Let me ask the same question sort of Jason, too, and Brian. When you guys are out and around and talking with folks, do you get a lot of people giving their thoughts directly to you about the job you're doing and what they wish you would change and what you're doing that they like?
Okay, well, I haven't actually, I've only been here for almost 2 years, so in the time that I've been here, the weather's been relatively quiet except for the hurricane. So in my experience of events that have happened since I've been on television here, I don't have a lot of feedback as to what we're doing in severe weather. I do get feedback, though, of what people would like to see or hear in the morning show, and I try to adapt that as much as I can. I like to try to do my best guess at what temperatures are like across the entire state, as opposed to putting one number up there and saying the high today is going to be 61 and it was 59 in Gadsden and 68 in Livingston. It, like James always says, it's not a one number kind of state. So I try to really break up the forecast early, and that's really the only feedback that I've gotten, other than stop playing the Mississippi State fight song after you beat Alabama. Which I didn't do. Somebody did that for me.
Oh, that was done for you. Okay.
That was done for me.
How about you, Brian?
Well, to be honest, being the part-time guy, kind of fill in, I really don't get that much feedback. I get comments from people about seeing me at a Storm Alert Extreme or an event like that, or seeing me on television from time to time, but very little in the way of criticism. But it's always interesting to me, and it was when I was in the Weather Service, to be able to be out among people and hear what they're talking about. James did a little session on the IM, the instant messaging, and he also did something that I think is sorely needed among meteorologists, and that is to bring the idea of how severe this weather is and the impacts that it has, bring it down to the personal level. You know, when you're sitting in an office looking at these images from radar and hearing people on answer machines and radios, you know, it becomes very impersonal, and it's really important to realize that warnings do make a difference and that the severe weather we're warning for has a tremendous impact on lives. And James told the story of Matthew Seals, and that always, to me, you know, kind of brings me down to earth once again and remind me of why we're in this business, to try to improve the safety of people and to keep people safe. And that's really, the bottom line is that's what it's really all about. And it makes me feel good that people have said that I did a good job, but the important point is to try to get all this information across, and there's a lot of it. And I don't make any bones about it. It's not a simple thing. I mean, you know, it'd be nice if the nature and the atmosphere worked with A, B, and C, and you get T, a tornado. But it doesn't work that way. And so all this training really, I think, pays off down the road with improved warnings. And if we can save just one life, it was all worth it.
And you mentioned Matthew Seals. James, for folks listening who don't know, correct me, that's the young child killed in the April 1998 West Jefferson County tornado. Is that right?
Yes, the child was Nathan Seals, and Matthew is the father of Nathan. And I befriended Matthew soon after the April 8th, 1998 tornado. Nathan died at the Children's Hospital, David. He was the 34th victim of that outbreak. We had 34 deaths, and he held on to life at the Children's Hospital for 2 weeks, and he passed away. And the funeral was really tough because you had the dad and the mom and two siblings with paramedics flanking them because they were still in bad shape from their wounds. The dad with a broken back, the mom with a punctured lung and a couple of broken legs, and the baby brother and sister were beat up, but they would be okay. And the dad's paralyzed, Matthew, but that was, to me, the hardest part of that whole disaster. And of course, that doesn't take away anything from the other 33 that died, but some of you know, listening, the funeral of a child is a very difficult thing to attend and deal with. And Matthew and I, to this day, here we are 8 years later, we meet once a month at a local restaurant, and we talk about issues, and a lot of the stuff we talk about is private, but one of the things that he's been very supportive of, it's the severe weather safety thing we do, and what Brian does with the Storm Alert Extreme, and he even went with us 1 year, David, the entire Storm Alert in the spring, every single stop, and we had seven stops that year, And the crowds were just massive. And when Matthew came out there in that wheelchair, you could hear a pin drop. You know, for me and the TV guys, it's blah, 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 so what? But he made quite an impact. And Matthew went to Starkville, Mississippi, over to Mississippi State one year for the Southeastern Severe Storm Symposium and addressed the crowd there. So his story is pretty remarkable, and he's quite an encourager. So, and I agree with Brian. We've got to remember that real people are involved in these things, and that's what it's all about.
When you are on television in front of the green wall during a severe weather outbreak, talking about the movement of a potentially deadly storm, I guess this really brings it home to you personally, James, in a very different way, to know a family so profoundly affected by what you're trying to warn people about.
Absolutely. Once you get these images in your mind, and I will always have Nathan's picture. I could just close my eyes and see that photograph of him. I didn't know him. He went to North Highlands Elementary School. He was a third grader out there. Didn't know him, but I might as well, because that's what I do, is, you know, hang out in schools every day doing weather programs. And you think about, you know, there's, you don't want another death like that to happen on your watch. So it gives you a little incentive to stay a little later at night. You know, it's easy to think about going home. You're tired. Probably nothing's going to happen. But when you start thinking about a Nathan Seals, it gives you the incentive to keep on keeping on. And I think if we all focus on that, we'll do our job a lot better. I know I sure do.
J.B. Elliott, let me ask you something. You do severe weather on radio in Birmingham a lot when severe weather's happening and James and the TV crew are tied up. Do you have similar feelings about trying to save lives of people that probably are listening to you when you're on the air?
I do, for sure. And, you know, anytime there's a power failure, they can't get TV, so they turn to radio. And we have an enormous number of listeners that are in their automobiles anyway, traveling through or traveling around town. So they're very concerned about it, and we do try to. Of course, we have to do a radio broadcast a little bit different from TV, because if you're watching TV, you can see all the graphics and see where everything is, but we have to explain in words where the main danger is.
And that poses some challenges, doesn't it?
Yeah, we try to pinpoint it as much as possible. For example, for people traveling through the state, interstate travelers, we have a lot of those. We get incoming calls, and we've had calls from people from Michigan and a lot of different states that are traveling through and wanting to know if the danger was on that particular interstate they were on. So we explain about every 10 minutes. We do about a one-minute roundup of weather along the interstates, saying which interstates are in danger and what the weather is on I-20 from Birmingham to Atlanta and I-65 down to Mobile. We can do that in about 1 minute. And we also, when a tornado warning is issued, we try to explain that this tornado danger is about 65 miles northwest of Birmingham, just to use an example, so people will be able to pinpoint where it is.
And for folks who do want to be able to listen to you, if they want to know where to tune you in, if they anticipate being out during severe weather, what are the places where they can hear you?
98.7 KISS FM, 95.7 WBMJ, and 610 WAGG, that's an AM station. And they also have a news station on 1320 kilocycles, I believe, that carries it. But the two FM stations, of course, reach out the furthest. Both of those FM stations are 100,000 watts, which is the maximum power you can have in the United States. And I picked them up north of the Tennessee River and down to Montgomery and over to the West Georgia and even over to Starkville, Mississippi. So they get out a long ways.
And James, you are carried, your television audio, I believe, is carried on a number of stations too, which increases the reach even more, right?
Yeah, our radio partners are great. And all the time I tell people, just listen to JB on the radio, but the other Cox stations downtown will often just pick up our audio, WZZK 104.7, their sister station 97.3, and the Eagle 106.9, and in Tuscaloosa 98.1. It seems like that you can hear that station from Dallas to Washington, D.C. They got a huge footprint, and having our audio on the radio is just a great service. So, and you know, we might have a little deal here this week, David. We hadn't talked about this week's weather yet.
Yeah, that was my next question. It's kind of been one of these iffy things. You've been talking about the GFS now for the better part of almost a week, kind of wondering which way it was going to go.
And, you know, this thing's been on it. I'll say this. The GFS nailed this thing 2 weeks ago. Sometimes that voodoo land stuff works. And the very dynamic storm is going to blow through here. The question involves the quality of the air mass. And as we do this update, we're doing this Weather Brains here at 8:30 or 9 o'clock on a Monday night. We're in this dry, you know, continental air, and I don't know if we can get the really juicy maritime tropical air back up in here by Wednesday, but even if it's a little sliver of instability, that could put a pretty mean squall line through here Wednesday. So I think we'll have to be on our toes, and if by chance dew points can slip up in the low 60s, and look out, that's a, it's a classic severe weather setup. It's just a matter of the type of air mass we have in here. So that's Wednesday for the people that are listening to the show prior to that, and we'll just, and I'll tell you one thing, we're going to have to get our act together. We had a severe weather episode on September the 22nd, and really, other than that, it's been a pretty quiet year. So we might want to go through our, do a little dry run here tomorrow and be sure all this stuff works.
So your confidence is high for thunderstorms in central Alabama Wednesday. It's just a question of intensity at this point?
Yes. There's no doubt we'll have an active weather day. It's going to be windy and wet and stormy. The question is, will we have enough instability for a big severe weather problem? And J.B. Elliott knows the answer, as always, and we'll just have to wait on him to tell us. What do you think, J.B.?
Oh, I think right now it might be marginal. I noticed one of the new models that just came in is progging a maximum dew point Wednesday of only 50 at Birmingham. So we need to get up to around 58, 60, or 62, better even yet, 64, 65 on the dew points. But, okay. Of course, that could change. There's plenty of time to change.
So we'll just have to watch that. And, James, I assume on the backside, a fairly good cold shot coming our way?
Yeah, Thursday will be kind of a cold, raw day, you know, cloudy and maybe some light rain early in the day. Not a true Arctic air mass type thing, just cold advection and clouds and a secondary surge coming in for the weekend. And looking ahead to Thanksgiving week, which everybody says is the busiest travel day of the year. I guess that's right. I don't know. The week, I guess, for the most part now looks kind of benign, except for the Pacific Northwest, where they might have to be building arcs up there by next week. Really raining up there.
Lots of rain up there. You sometimes use a term, actually not just you, James, I've heard it from several folks, talking about cold weather, and this ties into a listener's email that we received. Ryan Melberg, listening to us from up in Appleton, Wisconsin. That's a pretty good stretch. Thanks for emailing us, Ryan. He had an interesting suggestion. James wanted to run by you guys here on the air, and he said it'd be nice to have a weather term of the week just to kind of explain, and I don't know that we do one every single week, but there sure are a lot of terms that might be helpful to go over for folks, and I want to throw one term in the pot based on Ryan's suggestion since it ties into cold weather, and that's the 540 thickness line. How about a little mini lesson on what exactly that means?
Let's let Jason describe that one. He's the young guy, the academic guy.
Go for it, Jason.
Let's hear about those critical thickness values,
okay,
Jason.
Okay, well, let's see. Where should we start?
First off, real basic 101 here. The air has a physical thickness to it, right?
Well, right. Air is made of particles. It behaves like a fluid.
So if I had a long enough yardstick and could go way up into the atmosphere, what would I find?
You'd find a lot of air, but that air gets thinner as you go up, and of course the air is going to be thicker at certain parts of the Earth than it is in other parts. Along the equator, the atmosphere is very thick, because just like when you have a pot of boiling water and that water expands, and if you let it go long enough, it's going to boil over, the atmosphere, when it warms, is going to continue rising and become thicker. Well, on the converse of that, the colder the air is, the less thickness you have of the atmosphere. So a low thickness means usually you're going to have cold air, and a high thickness value means you've got some pretty warm air. The deal with the 540 line is, somehow or another, and I'm not really sure how this happened, how it came about, but it became maybe mistakenly known as the demarcation line for air that's cold enough for snow or that is not cold enough for snow. That's not necessarily true. A lot of times we look at the 540 line, and that's kind of the thing that stands out to us, because that means that the thickness value between one layer of the atmosphere labeled as the 1,000 millibar layer and a layer several thousand feet above that called the 500 millibar layer is at least 5,400 geopotential meters. Am I getting too technical?
Okay, but what I'm hearing out of this then is as the air mass is thinner, you're going to have a colder atmosphere.
Well, as it, yeah.
Simple terms.
As the thickness of that layer is thinner, that means that because the air is cold, it's very dense, it's very compacted, and the top of the atmosphere is lower when you have cold air that versus warmer air.
So right.
When that critical thickness is 5,400 meters between the 1,000 millibar layer and the 500 millibar layer, that has become known as a critical thickness for snow. It's not necessarily always going to work out that way. Matter of fact, most of the time it won't work out that way.
But I hear you guys mention that in forecasting weather for here in central Alabama. So is that a parameter for a certain range of temperatures, perhaps?
Not necessarily. No, you can actually have a 540 thickness with a temperature at the surface of 50 to 55 degrees. I've actually seen that happen in Alabama. But most of the time, when the 540 line's coming down into north or central Alabama, it's with a strong trough like the one that's coming through this week. We don't have Arctic air underneath that, like James said earlier. So the air down below is probably not going to drop much below 34, 35 degrees at the lowest at the overnight low over the weekend. And then that next surge comes in, and there's actually some more substantial cold air with that, and you'll see the thickness is lower. But the basic thing to know about the 540 line is somehow it became known as the demarcation line for snow or rain. That's not always going to be the case. There are a lot of other factors that go in. There's a critical thickness between 700 millibars and 850 millibars, between 700 and 500, between 850 and 500. And you can see all those different charts on the internet, but the 540 is a critical thickness level, meaning it's 5,400 meters from one point in the atmosphere to another to a pressure level, and that's usually indicative of air that's relatively cold enough, given all other things being favorable for snow.
Okay. James, you want to throw in anything on the thickness line? I've seen you refer to it being well south of Birmingham from time to time.
Yeah, you know, the first glance at all these maps when you're looking for some type of line to mark the difference between rain and freezing or frozen precipitation, I guess the ones you glance at right away are the 540 line, or again, the value of 5,400 meters between 1,000 and 500 millibars, and the other one is the freezing line at 850 millibars. It's about 5,000 feet off the ground, at the zero Celsius line. If you're going to do a quick glance, those are two good ones to look at. And oftentimes, that can represent some fairly cold air. But like Jason said, with those thickness values, sometimes the air is very cold aloft, and it makes it that cold. So just something, you know, part of the puzzle. This whole thing is a big, big puzzle, and that's just one piece of it.
Okay, real good. Thank you, guys. Anything else?
Appleton is a neat town. I spent a week there a few years ago and went out to Door County, which is a peninsula sticking out into Lake Michigan. Very pretty.
Appleton's about 30 miles or so southwest of Green Bay, according to Ryan in his email. Never have been up there, but it sounds like it might be pretty.
That is correct.
I've never been to Appleton, but I've been to a town called Osseo, Wisconsin.
I've heard of that place,
too. Got a neat little store called We Aim to Cheese.
I've heard from a lot of folks that's a beautiful state. Hope to get up there sometime.
It is.
All right. Well, thanks again for the email from Mr. Melberg. And if you'd like to send us email, we'd love to hear from you. Our address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, our voicemail number is 206-339-5482. That's 206-339-5482. And a reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. For Jason Simpson, J.B. Elliott, Brian Peters, and James Spann, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. Weather Brains, copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. Fun show, guys. Thank you all.
See you, yes. Boys.
See
thanks
ya.
To all
thanks
of you. I learn a lot from you guys.
Same here.
It's all you, JB.
Same thing. I learn from you guys every show. I know more now about the 540 thickness line, thanks to Mr. Simpson.
Yeah, me. I'm just rambling around. You know, that's all I do. And by the way, final score from Starkville, Mississippi. Mississippi State 61, Loyola Marymount 37.
You bulldog freak, you.
All right.
Well, you will sleep well tonight, won't you, Jason?
I will.
All right. Bye.
All right. See y'all.
Bye.
Bye.